Hello, Steve. Hello, Jill. It's time to game classy.
Hello.
Steve is here, finally.
I am here. I've done it.
So Steve has not overslept, not forgotten, and he has gone to the bathroom beforehand. So he is prepped for this.
I am ready. I am ready. We are in there, boys.
We are ready to talk about basically nothing.
We got a number one victory royale. Yeah, Fortnite. We about to get down. Get down 10 kills on the board right now. Just wiped out Tomato Town. My friend just got down. I revived him. Now we're headed southbound. Now we're in the Pleasant Park streets. Look at the map. Go to the mark. Cheat. Take me to your Xbox safe to play Fortnite today. You can take me to Moisty Mire, but not Loot Lake. I really love to chug jug with you. We can be pro Fortnite gamers.
Okay. Is that like a legit thing? Like,
yeah, that's a song. That's an actual song.
I mean, like, what would make someone want to make that song?
Apparently it is a parody of an actual song.
Oh, okay.
Just the lyrics are replaced with Fortnite references.
Fortnite references.
Yes. This in the writing world is what we refer to as foreshadowing. Yes. Anyway, continue.
It's foreshadowing. Welcome everybody to Game Classy. I'm your host Joe, and with me as always is Steve.
Game Classy.
And as anyone will tell you, 99% of the time I forget to do that. I shouldn't say 99% of the time. We've only done like 250 episodes, so I probably forget it like 75% of the time, because like I only do it like once out of every four episodes.
I'm old, Joe Dolph. Like not enough butter scraped over too much bread.
That's exactly it. I think that is the most appropriate line ever written in the Lord of the Rings movies. Like the most like I feel ya line in that movie.
Yes, I concur with the statement. I agree.
And I know he's talking about his soul being corrupted by the ring, right? That's what it's all about.
It's also just like his age and like feeling the weight of I believe he thinks it's just his age.
Well, yeah,
but, you know, we all know it's,
yeah, he thinks it's just his age. But that's like, yes. It's the same thing with us. It's like we think we're just getting older, but in reality, it's just capitalism crushing our bones.
Yeah, we're being corrupted by the ring.
Game Clancy became such a hardcore communist podcast, and we didn't even know. It's like going back to episode three, Steve doing the,
yeah, I sang like half the Soviet anthem in episode three. So
yeah, well, I don't even know if it's that far back, but whatevs.
I don't know. Look, the mood has been since the 90s of must crush capitalism.
There's a really cool movie out on Amazon that I think our listeners should check out. I wanted to bring this up because I kept on forgetting to do it in the last few podcasts. Mm-hmm. It's called, I gotta look it up really quick. Just
on a scale of good to bang an orc cartoon, what is the scale?
Oh, yeah, we got to talk about that too. This movie
cartoon was great.
This movie's about a solid seven. It's a horror movie. It's called Black Mountainside.
I actually did take the time to watch a horror film, not Japanese. It was like the first time I watched something that wasn't in Japanese for a very long time. But I actually ended up watching Caveat.
Caveat. Oh, is that the one with the rabbit?
That's the one with the rabbit. Yes.
Yeah. What'd you think?
It wasn't good. Go ahead.
I was gonna say it's very European.
Yeah, like I don't know. I really liked a lot about the movie. I thought the concept was really good, creepy, like it was very strange. I liked it. The rabbit obviously was fucking great. Like that's one of the most terrifying props I've ever seen. But like it just didn't, even the end, even the climax, like, was, you know, okay, but like it didn't come together in a sensical way. Like, it didn't, like,
yeah,
like there was like a huge climactic moment, but like it didn't feel like a climax because it didn't make any sense, because like the movie wasn't, you know, it's like when you're building up to a climax, generally you build up to the climax. This is just suddenly like, here's a thing that just happened now that we didn't really, like, we kind of foreshadowed. I don't know, it was like, yeah, it wasn't,
I like the build up to the climax myself.
Yeah, same.
No, it's, yeah, the movie was very European. It was a lot of style over substance. Like, they tried to create, yes, atmosphere and mood. But if you have atmosphere and mood and nothing underneath it, it's like eating whipped cream. It's very delicious, yeah, but there's no substance to it, you know?
That's a really good analogy. Yeah, it was very much like whipped cream. Because, like, it wasn't, like, yeah, I wasn't like, oh, man, I'm not having a good time watching the movie.
Because everyone loves just eating whipped cream. Like, you literally put the bottle in your mouth and do whippets and get creamy sugar at the same time.
Right, exactly. And so, yeah, I wasn't like, oh, this is agony, I'm having a bad time. It was just like at the end, like when the movie was over, I was kind of like, that was kind of empty calories, wasn't it?
Yeah. Black Mountainside is the one that I was watching. It's very Lovecraftian. It's about these like five or six guys that are
Lovecraftian in the Reanimator way, or Lovecraftian in the Mouth of Madness way?
Neither, actually. It's kind of almost like Color Out of Space.
Ooh, now, so, see, now that's high praise, because Color Out of Space was,
yeah, but it's not like as good as Color Out of Space. This movie is about, fair, like six guys. They're in a mountain. They're on a mountain in Canada, and they discover a like an ancient site that should not be there. Like, it's a very out of place kind of like temple, and they're like, the whole thing is they're part of like a college team to go there and check it out, to do a survey of the area. Very, very scientific. It's not like, oh, we're just going to go and like dig this thing out, like most movies would be. Like, this is like, we're removing an inch of dirt at a, you know, per day to see what's going on underneath it. And eventually, you know, it goes the way that you think it would go. It's not great. The acting is very amateurish, and it's very, very Canadian. Like, every 5 seconds, someone says a boot.
Nice.
Which I appreciate.
Do we have any Canadian listeners? Yeah, I was thinking about that the other day.
We have a couple from Vancouver, from the Couve.
Oh, okay. Nice. Yeah. Very good. Shout outs to Canada.
Shout outs to the Couve.
Shout outs to the Couve.
Yeah. You know, I always want to move to the Maritimes, as I always say. That's my area. I want to talk this.
Yeah. The Maritimes?
Yeah, Prince Edward Island, New Brunswick. What's the other one that's out there? The other island. Yeah, whatever. But, you know, the Maritime provinces. Did you know, Steve? There's not a lot of people know this, but Canada didn't actually become a country till like 1970.
I did not know this. I knew that they were part of the UK, right?
They were part of the UK. They were a province. I'm looking this up right now. They actually became a full-on country. Where does it say that? I know that the people in Canada are like, all right, you know, it happened in 1972. But, you know, something like that. Okay,
American, so, hosers, why don't, yeah, you eat some poutine?
So they actually, Newfoundland, which was the other part of the Maritime, joined Canada in 1949. It was like a completely separate thing until like 1949. And Canada did not adopt the Maple Leaf flag until 1965.
All right.
And official bilingualism didn't happen until 1969.
Viva le Quebec.
Viva le Quebec. Viva J. Sherman. Viva le Quebec. That was the first time I ever knew about the Quebec independence movement, was from watching the
Critic.
Yeah.
Man, I love The Critic.
I'm actually very pro Quebec independence. I don't know why. I don't have a stake in the claim for Quebec independence. I just think Quebec independence would be fun.
I like it.
Yeah.
That's the kind of passion that I, that's the kind of passion that we're here about at Game Classy.
Yeah. We're very pro Quebec independence. And you know, the funny thing
and,
is,
and the follow up, the important follow up of being why, because it'd be funny.
Exactly. Exactly.
I think that's an important part of the conversation. Like, yeah, I don't know. Cause it'd be funny.
Yeah. I love the idea. Canadian history is so fascinating to me because it's something like we should know more about Canadian history because we live within 100 miles of Canada. Like
the big recent thing I've heard about Canadian history has been not good, but it's been closer to American history, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah. But I mean, we live closer to Canada than we do our nation's capital. We can literally drive to Toronto, I think, in like less than 8 hours.
That's true.
Which some of our European listeners are like, I could drive from Portugal to Russia in 8 hours. So
yeah, I know that was always one of the fun things whenever I talked to my to anyone from Europe when I was playing on the ladder for Dawn of War. They were always like blown away by how far distances were, and I was like, yeah, it fucking sucks, man.
Yeah, it's and the Canadians, you know, they have their own currency, which is the loonie, which I think is a fantastic form of currency. the Canadian pound is the dollar pound is called the loonie because there's a picture of a loon on it, and their $2 coin, which they have and we don't, is called the toonie. So
coins are sweet. I like coins.
All right, so actually into some gaming. No, let's talk about the Warhammer Plus first, because I guess that's kind of the news. Warhammer Plus got launched and they did a like free showing of their Yarrick cartoon, which is called Old Baelei.
Yes.
I wonder if anybody really like I wonder how many people watched that. I wonder what the count was on that.
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was very good.
Yeah, I mean, I think I watched it like 2 or 3 times, right? You know, once was it early in the morning, and when I watched it another time, and then I watched it with some friends just to get their reaction. Mm-hmm. I think everybody's common thing was that was a cartoon that was more like just like a picture with voice acting underneath it. And I was like, yeah, that's an accurate way of putting that.
Yeah, the animation was definitely not fluid.
It was suspect.
Yeah, no, it's just mostly like kind of a slideshow, which I mean, I don't know.
That's a great way of putting it. It was a slideshow.
Yeah, it was a slideshow.
I'm kind of like, they could have done better on the animation. I mean, but it's like it depends on what you're looking for, because that wasn't really one that required heavy animation, because that was more of like, let's see some really fucking cool visuals more than, like,
I mean, it was very, very entertaining.
Yeah.
So like that's the thing too. Like, I don't know. I try not to get like too,
you're a much bigger animation fan than I am. So
I am a huge animation fan, but like, also I find that like the variable levels of animation is okay. Like, not everything needs to fucking look like Akira. Like that is actually a fact.
Yeah. I'll agree with that.
I think the important part is what you made entertaining, and does it read well in the visuals? And I thought that it hit the bars, like what it needed to be. Cause like it wasn't trying to, like, yes, it had a lot of slideshowiness, but it also didn't have, it didn't try to do complex visuals and cheat them by being like, we're going to just kind of not animate this like really complicated, you know, fight scene or whatever. Like, everything was fine. Does it make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. It showed me first of all, I'm an old man at this point. So it was like a lot of stuff that I liked, like, oh, there's pictures of things that I recognize, you know, that's what I wanted. You know, it's like, I don't care about like new things. Like, if they showed some like new orc thing, I'd be pissed because, you know, that's not what orcs don't have that. If like they had like a giant fucking like, orc, let's say like a 20-foot tall orc with his balls hanging down, swinging and hitting guardsmen, A, I would be impressed with that, but B, I'd be like, they don't have that in 40K. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, I probably would have just been like, orc.
Yeah, orc balls.
The gargants were really cool. The voice acting was fun. The orc sounded right. Everything looked correct. I don't know. I enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty good. Was it something that made me go like, oh my God, I have to sign up for Warhammer Plus and watch all of these cartoons? No, absolutely. No. Absolutely the fuck not. It did not do that.
Yeah. It did not make me want to get, like, I mean, it made me want to get Warhammer Plus, but at the same time, it wasn't enough to actually make me do it. They've been offering a fuck ton of people to sign up for this. It's been kind of, on one hand, it's like, as a fan, you're like, oh, you get like a $10 gift certificate and you get like a mini if you sign up for the whole year. And it's like, it's not a bad deal, but at the same time, as a, I'm just like, I can't be bothered literally to move my mouse over to subscribe. I can't.
I mean, for me, it's like, if I cared about those minis, sure. Like, yeah. I'm just not a minis collector anymore. So it doesn't really.
I mean, I like the Assassin mini, but it's like, at the same time, it's like, I don't play 40K. I'm never going to paint this thing. So it doesn't bother me.
Exactly. It's the same thing for me. It's just like, I have these Stormcast models. I probably won't be buying any other models, like outside of like maybe some more Stormcast models. Like, I'm good. So I don't have the like that initial, oh my God, this is so cool. I want to collect all these armies. Like that's gone. I do not have that anymore.
Yeah. Well, exactly. And it's, maybe what I'm hoping for is I'm hoping that more of the cartoons leak onto some pirated sites. So that way I can watch them. And then if I think that I'm seeing like good content generated regularly, maybe then I would subscribe. But
no, I mean, honestly, if it's Workshop, so I'm not going to say that they're going to do this because this is too smart for Workshop. But like, if they wanted to be very clever, they would have a rotating free teaser always, like,
yeah.
So next month or in 2 months or whatever, they would put up, you know, Old Baylai 2 or whatever.
But I think what they're going to do though is they're going to create like a half dozen cartoons, maybe a dozen, and then sit on their hands and not release anything new after 2 years, right?
I don't know. They've got a lot of people working for them now. Like a lot of the dudes who were just doing the content for free, like they're getting paid now. So like it's probably not going to dry up like that.
Steve, they used to do it for free, and that's what I want on the YouTubes.
I mean, I'm just saying there's a lot of people doing stuff, so it's probably going to be fine. In terms of stuff coming out.
I actually had a really great conversation about that in general, about the differences between Games Workshop taking down YouTube videos and Games Workshop taking down 3D printed files, because that's been like a big thing as well. That there was just another big like DMCA strike.
Also, let me just really quickly like piece in here, because I didn't actually follow the YouTube part, but it didn't basically most of the people from like, wasn't the YouTube thing Workshop being like, hey, take your videos down, we're hiring you, like
that was the main thing of like what a lot of things went down was Games Workshop saying, we're gonna hire you and you make videos for us, so we're gonna own your videos and so on and so forth. And everyone was like, oh, okay with that. And well, the creators were like, for sure, fine, that's what I wanted. I didn't get paid for this.
Mm-hmm.
Games Workshop actually didn't strike any videos. Like
that's what I thought was happening. Like, I think they just literally were like, hey, take your videos down, we're hiring you. And then the only big like takedown person took themselves down.
The Emperor's Text-to-Speech took themselves down, and that may have been like, I don't know the exact reasoning behind why. Well, he said because of Games Workshop's blah blah blah, but in reality I think that they offered to hire him. This is okay, so this might be like my behind the scenes, like my way my brain works. Games Workshop wants to hire him. Mm-hmm. They're not offering him more money than he's making through his Patreon. So he was like, no. And then they're like, well, but at the same time, then afterwards, he's like, well, I'm probably going to get struck down because of this.
So I'll just take myself down first and let workshop handle it.
He just stopped making videos. He outright said, I'm not making any more videos.
Oh, okay.
So we'll see how that plays out. But
I don't know. I don't. It's kind of interesting being
an outsider,
a quasi outsider. Yeah, it's because it's like, I mean, like, I'm like, you know, I'm reasonably into workshop stuff. Like, I like Age of Sigmar. It's pretty cool. But like, I'm not involved in the like, I guess, meta content. Like, I don't read the novels or watch the YouTube stuff or pay attention to any of those.
That's exactly
guys.
What it is. It's all of that. That's what it's all about now. Like, that's what's generating all of that online buzz about workshop and all of the like stuff that you see online, all the inside memes and all that are all this outside content that's usually user created. You know, I think the Emperor's Text-to-Speech got a little too memey, like to the point where it was like, I get it. You guys are making a fun joke about this. And then everyone keeps repeating that joke over and over and over again. Not even that funny, but it's like people are like, oh, we all know this one thing, so we can repeat this over and over again. And therefore it becomes funny. I'm not saying that's anything unique. If talk to any male over the age of 45 about Caddyshack and you'll get the same exact fucking thing. But
wait, I think I can guess it. It's yes.
Yep. They'll do Bill Murray impressions from Caddyshack as well.
I'd never try to do a Bill Murray impression. Bill Murray sounds like Bill Murray.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Caddyshack. It's a movie that's actually very, very good. I take that back. It was very, very good and funny for its time. I haven't watched it in a while, and I fear that some of the comedy may be a bit dated. But all comedy is dated at this point. So
I haven't seen Caddyshack. I actually don't think I've ever seen Caddyshack.
Yeah,
I'm fairly certain I've never watched Caddyshack,
and it's worth it just for Kenny Loggins. I'm all right.
I mean, I know the song. I like the song.
Yeah, with the dancing gopher that people lost their mind about. It was the baby Yoda of the 1980s.
Yes, I remember that. And then there's a John Candy movie that was.
What about the Who's Harry Crumb?
Maybe.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Oh, I love Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. That's a good movie.
It is a great movie.
He's just trying to get home for Thanksgiving.
I'll throw a shout out to my D&D group, even though
a very rare Thanksgiving film.
Yes. My shout out to my D&D group. We did what was supposed to be a one shot. And of course, one shots never really last one shot. It was a three shot, but we did, the DM did a Christmas in July one shot where we basically had to go through the McAllister house. It was actually a really fun session.
That sounds great.
However, like we didn't go planning into it, but it was all Home Alone references and all of that fun stuff. And I wanted to have a cameo by Gus Polinski, the Polka King of Chicago.
Yeah, but, you gotta.
Yeah, he was not in the one shot.
Wow, your DM sucks.
Well, you know, Gus Polinski never actually was in the house, so.
Ooh, you know what? I retract my statement. I'll accept this defense.
Yes, and it was pretty good. In that fashion, it was all Home Alone, and of course, we had to fight some other.
The change, you filthy animal.
We had to fight that guy. We also had to fight the Grinch and the Bumble from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, that was my only thing was that there was there was like four mini boss encounters.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the mini boss encounters went on a little bit too long. I think that's why it ended up being three sessions.
I think that's a D&D problem. Like that's like, I know I frequently shit on fifth edition as is correct, but I think the problem with D&D in general, and like even the older editions kind of had this a bit, but like the newer editions, I think it's worse. Shit takes too fucking long in that goddamn game.
Yeah. I mean, it's especially if you have mini bosses, like I was kind of talking about this in terms of D&D, the monsters that you encounter, if you're just doing a basic dungeon crawl, there should be much more smaller encounters where they're not necessarily going to do that, or they're not going to hurt you that much, but the accumulated damage of multiple tiny encounters should be more terrifying than like big encounters.
You know what systems like that? Fourth edition.
Yeah, I guess you're
fourth
right.
Fourth edition has minions. It has the ability to do super small encounters because of minions, and they go over to I don't know. Like I said, I think fourth edition did a lot of things right, and they kind of like, because fourth edition was such a it wasn't quite a commercial failure. Like, it wasn't objectively like, this is a huge failure. Obviously, like, they released fourth edition for a long time, so it sold enough to be profitable without having to like immediately jump to another edition.
Yeah,
but it was certainly a social failure in terms of like a perception based failure, for sure, because like everyone shits on fourth edition constantly. Like, people still shit on fourth edition now. Like, there's people who are just like playing fifth edition just jacking themselves off about how much fourth edition sucked.
Yeah.
But
I mean, yeah, fourth edition ran for 6 years. So
yeah, it definitely ran long enough to be considered successful financially, because you don't lose money for 6 years straight if you're a subsidiary of fucking Hasbro. Okay. But anyway, fourth edition. Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
No. I was thinking, I'm gonna transition us once.
Oh, okay. Thought. So fourth edition did a lot of stuff that I thought was really, really good, and it did a lot of stuff right. It did a lot of stuff wrong, no doubt, but it did a lot of stuff right. And they kind of, because of the bad fifis, they ignored all the really good things they did with that edition and went to this, you know, the current edition, which I think is a shame, because I think fourth edition actually offers a gameplay experience that most D&D players want, because most D&D players want the battle map. Most D&D players want to move their little toys around the fucking table. And like, if that's what most people are doing, like, make the most efficient edition for that. And that was the problem with fourth. That was the actual mechanical issue with fourth edition, is that fourth edition was not efficient. It was very good at, because if you ever played like the D&D board games, the Castle Ravenloft one, or the
Wrath of Ashardalon,
those are legit just fourth edition.
Yeah.
So like, you could see how you could make it more efficient, because it's playable as a board game. So like, you could do it. So I was saying, like, I'm kind of like, they didn't use minions, like, they didn't bring over minions, they didn't they changed. Say, I actually really preferred the saving throw system in fourth edition, because of the way saving throws work in contemporary. Like, obviously my number one preference is the saving throws of old D&D, where like saving throws really matter, and like there's lots of saving throws. But if you're not gonna do that, I would much prefer the fourth edition version, where your saving throws are basically a bunch of different armor classes, where like stuff tries to hit you, and like it basically tries to hit, you know, your dex armor essentially. Yeah. Like, what's like, I think that that's a little more of understandable, palatable design in the terms of like, we're playing a board game, because that's what D&D, like I said, D&D is the most popular board game.
Well, did you ever see the old meme where it's never really happened, but there was a fake quote that was attributed to John Lennon, where a reporter asked him, is Ringo the best drummer in the world? And John says, Ringo isn't even the best drummer in the Beatles. I literally made the meme to send to you, but it didn't turn out really right. It's like, the reporter says, is D&D 5th the best edition in the world? And it just said in the bottom, it says, D&D 5th isn't even the best edition of D&D.
Yes.
It's 4th edition is a whole thing. I just think that, and I was talking about this too, is that 6th edition is around the corner.
I don't know about that.
You know, it came out in 2013. It's 2021, which is, you know, it's almost 10 years old at this point.
I just don't know about that,
and
man.
Even AD&D second only lasted about 10 years. Like, I don't think they're going to go longer than 10 years with this edition.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
I know it's a cash cow, but the thing is,
I don't actually think they do, because they managed to create a,
ecosystem for making money.
this is me just speculating here, obviously, okay. But go speculate. So the biggest difference between fifth edition and why I think, I mean, I'm not going to say that like Succession's around the corner, because it might be, you never know. They're going to keep that under, they're going to keep that under the tightest of wraps. No one's going to know when that's coming until they announce it.
Yeah.
But here's where, here's one of the things I'm going with. One of the reasons the additions previously had such a high turnover, I mean, I say high turnover, but like the reason they had like such a very like targeted and obvious like lifespan life cycle is because the rules bloat got ridiculous on top of the apparent barrier to entry. So what I mean by that is, before fourth, like fourth edition lasted less time than fifth edition has already existed. So that's facts. Fourth edition was 6 years. We're at, what did you say? It was 2013.
It came out in 2014. So we're 7 years now.
Okay. So we're a year after fourth edition, but there's one player's handbook for Dungeons and Dragons fifth edition.
Yes.
For fourth edition, there were three. There were three player's handbooks. There's player's handbook one, player's handbook two, player's handbook three. Then there was multiple DM's guides. There was multiple monster manuals, so on and so forth. Yeah. So,
well, I mean, like, look at it this way. Original Dungeons and Dragons came out in 1974. AD&D first came out in 1977. So that was only 3 years. So in 77 to 85. So that's what, 5, 6, 7, 8 years for AD&D. Then AD&D second, my edition, which I like to say, actually only was published from 1989 to 1995. Now I always say 99 because technically that third ed came out in 2000, but it was discontinued in 95. There was 4 years of, or 5 years of no D&D, anything new being put out for D&D. So technically only 6 years for second, which is actually has, I think, the most amount of material produced for it.
Second has an absolutely
fuck ton,
staggering amount of material.
Yeah, third edition only ran from 2000 to 2008, so that's 8 years. But it's longer if you include Pathfinder, of course.
Yeah, and third edition has more material than any other edition by like a fucking country mile.
You think?
Yes, because third edition has an absolute absurd amount of official supplements, and it has an absurd amount of official slash unofficial supplements. Because
we're only
the OGL stuff. No, you got to remember the OGL stuff counts. It is official. That is an actual thing that pushed. That is one of the reasons that third edition became such nonsense.
Yes,
because of the OGL. Because you had people who were just like, they'd bring their OGL shit, and they'd be like, this is an official book. It says Wizards on it.
I accept your remarks, but I deny your reality. I do not account as OGL as official supplements.
Yeah, I agree. I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah. The problem is, and that's why Wizards no longer has an OGL.
Yeah, that's very true.
But because they wanted to try and do an organized play thing with starting with fourth edition, and you can't do organized play if you're letting people who aren't your company make product. Because like I said, as someone who was playing pretty actively for third edition, like if you're at the game store and you're running a third edition game, you always have some clown who's just like, I want to play an Amazon Tetragada, and they're like, I'm like, what the fuck is an Amazon Tetragada? Oh, it's from this really cool supplement book called Baga Baga Ba. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? That's not a book. And then sure enough, they pull out this book that has a fucking MS Paint looking ass cover. And I'm like, God fucking damn it.
MS Paint looking cover. No, I will also die on the hill that fourth edition, one of the things that I absolutely hate about fourth edition is the introduction of the Dragonkin and Tieflings as major playable races.
Well, Tieflings is a Forgotten Realms problem. I'll give you the Dragonborn.
It doesn't matter. I will die on this hill that they're all fucking, they're all furry cosplay.
Like I said, I'm going to sidestep that entirely. I'm literally just pointing out that you can't blame fourth edition for Tieflings. You can blame it for the Dragonborn as much as you want, but you can't blame it for Tieflings. Tieflings is a second edition problem from fucking Forgotten Realms, and I hate Tieflings.
Yeah, well, but I mean, like that's when they were introduced into the player handbook as like the major playable race. In third edition, it's been a long time and I don't have my third edition handbook anymore, and any of my third edition stuff anymore. But I firmly believe that in that rule book, I do not believe that they were a playable race.
No, the original third edition book is vanilla. There's no nonsense.
Dwarves.
Technically, it's a little nonsense because half orcs were introduced as playable race in third edition.
You're right. They were in there. But I'll go with a half orc before I'll go with tiefling.
I will not. I think a half orc is as ridiculous as a tiefling. I also don't like half elves either.
Well, I will. Okay. I'm with you in that. I think that they're both ridiculous, but you know,
I think they're stupid.
Yeah, stupid.
If you're gonna do playable orcs, just make them make sense. Like the thing that bothers me, but like I said, we've talked about it before. But like the thing that bothers me about D&D is that the world and the playable races don't make any sense in its own universe.
They take. All that D&D has done since 3.5 edition, where they're creating a new playable race, all that they do is they take an animal and they let it talk. That's it. They make it bipedal and let it talk. They are so uninspired with everything. And people eat that shit up. Like, oh, this is a race. They're called the Katakari. I was like, oh,
I mean, they've got other stupid ones. They've got half angels, half demons. They have the golem.
That's another stupid thing altogether. It's like they don't come up with anything fucking creative anymore.
The biggest problem for me is it doesn't make any sense to have that many sentient races in any capacity. Like it's barely arguable to have that many sentient races in anything. The only setting, and I actually talked to Angel Baker about this, but I was just like, what D&D wants. Like the way that they make each supplement book, each change, and all of the variety that they've added to like what's playable, what's not, what they want to be using for their base world is not Forgotten Realms. What they want to be using and what they fucking should be using is goddamn Planescape.
Oh, Planescape.
Because Planescape makes 100%, because then you could put all of these various races into the Planescape, and they just make sense because it's like the Tengu, like he's from this different plane of reality. That's why he's here.
Yeah, I was talking with my DM about that as well, and but my excuse was, he goes, well, I was kind of making the excuse of like it doesn't make sense, and I said if you're playing inside the D&D world, it doesn't make sense. You got to pick a better game engine to do this so that it works. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, what's a better game engine to work for this? And I went, GURPS. GURPS is the better system.
Yeah, GURPS, or if you want a playable one, Savage Worlds.
We said you want a playable one. Well, and that's the thing too, is like, I'm trying to tell him, like, because, you know, he's introduced to Dungeons & Dragons, and like many, many people, they think that Dungeons & Dragons is the gold standard of role-playing games. And it's just the legacy of
it's the 40K of role playing games.
It's the 40K of role playing games. And I was like, there's so many better systems out there that just people don't know. We talked about that on the last cast. But anyway, I want to transition from Dungeons and Dragons talk to the auction. The Games Plus auction actually happened this year. For the first time in a year and a half, we have had a Games Plus auction. And because it happened over the summer, I was able to go to the RPG auction, which was nice. I haven't been to that in forever. Cause I was like, you know what? I'm going to see if they have any of the D&D second stuff that I need. I'm going to see if they have any Call of Cthulhu. Call of Cthulhu.
I told you, there's no way there's going to be Call of Cthulhu only shows up at auctions like that if someone died.
Yeah, if someone died. The interesting thing about Call of Cthulhu, and you talked about this on just recently on a podcast, is that there's nothing in Call of Cthulhu that's really rare. I mean, there are some stuff, but Call of Cthulhu literally just reprints the same supplements, you know, in every edition.
They just kind of clean up some of the rules because it's the only game system where like you can have a first edition supplement and run an eighth edition game with that first edition supplement. As far as I know, it's the only RPG that is like that at all.
Yeah. It just literally, they reprint stuff when they're like, you know, it's been a long time since we printed this. Let's just print it again. And then they do like, let's get some new art. And then they put some new art in there. The Chaosium is really cool about that.
Yeah, and like you, there's some like the I think the there is a collectability stuff for the older edition stuff. Like there's still clearly like additional value if you have a first edition box set. Like it's gonna be worth, you know, something. It's not nothing, but it's not compared to like, you know, like, oh, this is the original Dungeons and Dragons box set. My boner. Yeah, it's not like that at all.
Yeah, it's like they have more, it's more collectible because you're like you appreciate the aesthetic of having something that's older as opposed to something that's newer. The Chaosium Kickstarter for the box set, I backed it. I think you backed it too.
Did you do
the 2-inch and 1-inch or just the 2-inch?
I just did the big one
as well.
It seemed kind of odd to get both. Like that seemed kind of wasteful to me.
Yeah, but they just sent the PDFs of all of the stuff that they're putting in the box set, and it's a wonderful like collection of Call of Cthulhu stuff. Like you go look through it and you're like, ah, you know, this is like everything I really need to not only run a game but run like a bunch of games. Like this is like a fantastic supplement.
You need nothing else.
Yeah, so you get this wonderful little like thing, and like, and looking at it and looking at my newer Call of Cthulhu books like releases that I have, it's like I don't need anything else. I can literally run everything based off this. These are nice little one shots. There's a couple session supplements, and then they have the big campaign too, I think, in there as well. So it's fantastic. But you know, so I went to the auction thinking like, you know what, I'll pick up anything I don't have. You want to know what the one thing I want is that it's I had the money for it, and if it popped up, I would have bought it, but it did not. Is I really want to get Horror on the Orient Express. It's a box set that I've wanted for a while. It's a $200 box set. So it's like, you know, I don't often have the money to buy that, but it's so cool looking. It's like, it's so sexy on every level. and it's discontinued at this point. They're not making more of them. They may do another edition, but they're not doing more of that one right now.
Yeah, I mean, I love box sets. I think box sets are a lost art form, to be honest.
They really are. But anyway, so I'm at the RPG auction, and so you know, they have some AD&D, some second ed AD&D stuff there. So I'm like, I'll bid on it. But all of them were going for like $25, $30. Now, that's eBay money. Right. Like all the supplements generally go for $25 to $30 on eBay. It's, you know, so it all depends. Like I'm there to get like a slight deal, like, you know, like 50. I was like prepared to spend $15 to $20 on most of the supplements that I saw. There were none of them that were like, I was like, oh, my God, this one is going to be, you know, there's like what Lair of the Spider Queen, Temple of Elemental Evil, like those sets go for, and those supplements go for a chunk of change. Complete box sets go for a chunk of change.
Yeah, I mean, it's just they go for a good amount, but not a ridiculous amount, is what I would say.
Well, like Spider Queen and Temple of Elemental Evil are usually $50 to $80, depending on their quality. Now, both of those supplements, as opposed to any of the other supplements I've ever seen, I have never seen a pristine copy of either of those without the cover ink rubbing off. So I don't know if it's like something that have to do with like the way that the book size is, because they're bigger books compared to like most of the supplements, but the ink always rubs off the front, and the fronts look terrible on all of the ones I've ever seen, but they still go for $50 because they're relatively rare. Mm-hmm. And, you know, from what people say, they're actual good supplements, but you know, that remains to be seen.
I don't know.
But the supplements were all going for like above eBay prices at the auction. And I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you people? Like, why are you spending more than you have to on this stuff?
I just imagine they're being like, what the fuck is wrong with people? I deal with the goddamn customers.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing too, is like, okay, so I remember this vividly from the auction. DL8, Dragonlance 8, which is Dragons of War, went up. And it's one that I need. And so I was going to bid on it. I was like, I looked up on eBay beforehand just to make sure that I wasn't bidding over the eBay prices. The eBay price was $25 for it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, if I can get this for $20, I'll do it. So I'm raising my hand. You know what? How much the supplement went for, Steve? You know how much that fucking supplement went for?
$80.
$85.
Damn.
I literally Costanza'd out at that moment. I stood up and I said, "That's it. I'm done."
I told you, dude, the collectors are losing their minds right now. And there's also like several, there's several pump and dump schemes occurring right now in the collectibles market.
Yeah.
The big, obviously it's not, I'm not going to go deep into it because this is a tabletop podcast, not a video game one, but the big, big pump and dump scheme right now is video games.
Yeah, well,
the video game, like the long and short is basically a company was created to create a CGC grading for video games.
Yep.
Called WADA. But the people who run WADA are all super rich and they're upping the value of games ludicrously to increase their own wealth. And it was just recently found out that the person who just bought the copy of Mario 64 for like $1 million, which is like absolutely beyond ridiculous, like that is like, what, that's like someone like I was talking about the expensive D&D red box, like I think like, or a pristine condition original Dungeons and Dragons set of the three books is maybe like, if it was pristine, like top value, maybe like a grand. Like,
yeah. No, you're absolutely right. I was gonna say about a grand if you sealed copy of the original red box.
So this is like someone buying that for $100,000.
Yeah.
So anyway, it comes to light that the person who made this huge purchase is one of the founders of WADA Games.
Well, and that's, it's the same thing all around. And as I always tell people, most of the time when you see anything sold for ridiculous amounts of money, it's money laundering. That's all it is. So like,
yeah.
And I don't know if I've talked about this before on the cast. I know it's something I've probably talked about with you before, but I know I've talked about this with Pat B, is that when you see like art at auctions going for millions of dollars and you're like, what the fuck? Why is this Picasso going for like millions of dollars? And you're like, you're thinking like, oh, it's relatively rare. Picasso's paintings weren't rare. Picasso painted shit all the time. You know what Picasso would do instead of paying for bills, Steve? He would just draw on the back of his bill and put it to give it to the restaurant, and the restaurant will be like, oh, we can't get rid of this bill because Picasso signed it and it's worth more than the money he would give us for the meal. So Picasso would get a buy by just like doodling on shit and giving it to people. And you know, so like there are thousands of Picassos out there. So why are these going for millions of dollars? It's because it's a legal way of cleaning dirty money. So like,
yes,
mafiosas and everything else would just pay for this shit with their millions of ill-gotten gains, because the fucking what's it called, the art auction house, they don't care, you know, they're taking it as cash.
You can also lock up money in untaxable assets.
Yeah, and you lock up your money in untaxable assets, and you know, a lot of these famous paintings, like paintings just disappear because they're locked in like storage lockers, and people don't give a shit about like the humidity and shit like this. They don't care. Some people do. Art collectors do. But these rich bastards, they don't care. It's all a money laundering scheme. That's all it is.
It's a cash scam.
Yeah, it's a cash scam. And that's
it's a cash scam, and the S in that word is a dollar sign.
Yeah. And so what a lot of these people do who have their money in, like, let's say not illegal, but maybe ill-gotten, and not always, because they do it with medicinal marijuana money as well, because you can't put those in a lot of banks because, you know, they can't be insured by the FDIC. Is they will buy things like housing. They will buy stuff like collectible games and things like that. They know that won't increase in value. Lego is a huge one as well. That's why Lego prices for used never go down.
Yes, Lego all maintains or increases in value.
Yes.
I know there was like a long time where they were talking about the there was a huge basically, like, if you want to break into the drug trade, you just need to start buying Legos.
Yeah,
because you can actually just you can actually pay for like huge amounts of drugs with Legos.
I actually broke into the drug trade by buying drugs.
I mean, that's fair. Well, see, what I'm saying is, if we're talking like, if you're gonna mule it, if you're gonna actually like go, you know, drive around, because like if you have a car full of Legos, no cop can be like, we're gonna asset forfeiture your Legos under this or that, like,
obviously, because you know, no U.S. cops.
They can try, but you could actually probably beat them in court with that if they tried to take your Legos. If they took your cash, you're never going to see that money ever again.
Well, I know what Steve is saying, but in reality, if cops take anything of yours, you're never seeing it again.
I'm just saying you could probably win the lawsuit. You'll never see the Legos again, but you could at least probably get some money back if you sue the police. Yeah. With the cash, they're just going to be like, he didn't have $1,000 on him. He had $100 on him.
Yeah. Cool. I may have to cut that part. I'm putting that pause so I know where to cut. I Costanza out of the auction. I was like, nope, thank you. No, I'm done. This is ridiculous. I went up and complained. I was like, this is ludicrous. This is lunacy. There's no reason. So I was very disappointed with that day, but I did go back for the mini game auction, which of course I do every year, you know, whenever they have it. And I was fully prepared for the nonsense of the bidding. And actually the mini auction was fairly calm in comparison to the RPG auction. I'm wondering if it's the Matt Mercer effect. I'm wondering if that had something to do with it. But the RPG auction was just, it was mind-bogglingly ridiculous. The mini auction was great though. I got a couple, I went in there specifically saying, I am not going to buy anything, any Games Workshop minis at all. I'm done with, I don't need anything for Games Workshop. There is no mini that I need. So what I was really looking for was like older packaging and box sets and stuff like that. Maybe some like in blister Grenadier shit, things like that. So I actually did get an AD&D minis box set for it's like Lair of the Orc Wyvern or something like that. But it's like one of those original yellow boxes with the little blue foam inside and the really really shitty metal minis, probably lead. I got that, which I was excited about. I didn't pay that much for it. And but there were a lot of those little D&D boxes that were being sold. I probably could have bought more of them, but you know, whatever. I don't want to blow my entire wad. But what I did get, which was really cool, is I got the two boxes. There was three originally released. I got the first two boxes of the Grenadier Marvel Superheroes that they released for the Marvel Superheroes game for D&D.
Ooh, fancy.
Yes, there are horrible figures. But I love them because they're so ugly and stupid looking.
All that shit's horrible.
I think that they were missing two figures out of both boxes. It was just, I think Captain America and Magneto are the only two that are missing.
I believe at that current time, you'd have to call him Magneto.
Magneto.
Yes, because there was a period of time where like I'm pretty sure it was Magneto. I don't remember. When they were doing a bunch of the shitty Marvel cartoons,
yes,
they kept calling him Magneto.
Yes, that is correct. And I think I want to say that the official turning point was during one of those great Home Shopping Network comic book shows, if you ever remember those from back in the day.
I don't.
You don't remember those? So Home Shopping Network, HSN, as I like to call it, which was I wish I had a chance to watch those now. But it was like, as a kid, I absolutely loved them because what they would do is they would have Stan Lee come on and he would, talk about whatever they're selling. So they'll be like, this is an authentic print by Rob Liefeld of Captain America, 19. So Stan Lee went on there and he actually was talking about X-Men #1, signed by Jim Lee, that you could get. And it's like, some people call him Magneto, but in reality, we created him to be called Magneto. Because
that's great.
I understand because of Magnet, but he did go on there and set the record straight. Those were fantastic, man. You could buy all those comic book nonsense and then the next episode would all be about knives. Sweet mall ninja knives.
The mall ninja knives.
I wonder if any of our listeners ever got Home Shopping Network in Europe, if that was like a thing.
I'm sure they had a version.
If they had like a German Home Shopping Network thing. Like, welcome to the sauerkraut hour.
It's willkommen.
Willkommen to the, yes. It depends on which area are we doing. Are we doing Bavaria or are we doing like Berlin?
Let's do Bavaria because I fucking love Bavarian cream.
Yes. Welcome to the Bavarian
flower. Why do they sound like a Swede?
I don't know. I'm trying to do the happy-go-lucky Bavarian. It's hard. I don't practice my German accents that often, Steve.
That's fair. German's pretty hard.
I always do like all of my German accents generally just turn into Joel Grey from Cabaret. Like that... Or what's his face from Casablanca? The guy who talks like this. I can't think of his name.
Peter Lorre?
Peter Lorre, yes. My Peter Lorre, you know, turns my German.
His fucking speech at the end of fucking Maltese Falcon is goddamn amazing.
Reek, you have to help me, Reek.
Yes. I fucking love the Maltese Falcon. That movie's so good.
Oh, yeah. It's a great movie, yeah. I'll give you that.
I'm a big fan. That's my noir standard. So
everybody's noir standard.
Is it? Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I always bring it up because I'm like, honestly, the number one reason I bring up the Maltese Falcon as my noir standard is because I'm still hoping that someday some lord just tells me a movie that I've never heard of before. And they're like, I think this is better than Maltese Falcon for noir. And I get to have a new noir standard.
Yeah. I mean, like,
it's very hard to top Maltese Falcon for like notes and beats in terms of being a noir. Like it literally hits everything. Like it's just good. I mean, there's plenty of noir out there and there's plenty of good noir out there, but like if someone was not that anyone would ever say this in the history of the fucking universe, but someone told me like, hey, I really want to get into film noir, I'd be like, well, obviously you need to start with Maltese Falcon.
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm not gonna like, I could think of like great noir movies, but I'm trying to think of like, are they better than the Maltese Falcon? I think that there's a lot that I would say is like, I would watch just as like as much. I mean, like probably like The Big Sleep, Double Indemnity.
The Big Sleep's good, yeah, for sure.
I'm looking at a list right now of just noir films. And I'm just like, yeah, those are probably like great top three. I like anything with Robert Mitchum because he's out of shape, in shape, which is always great for me to see.
That's the iconic, like the out of shape, in shape is really good. Really like the out of shape, in shape.
And then there's like, but there's also like, not neo-noir, but like,
plus that was before Hollywood got super crazy about super fucking crazy thin ladies, so the fucking all the old Hollywood actresses have fucking massive thighs.
It's true. Like, and then there's like the non there's the non murder mystery ones or like non detective ones like Sunset Boulevard, which is really great, but it's not like a very traditional noir, but just feels like a noir. I would still call it noir, but then you have some of the newer stuff, which I absolutely love, but I wouldn't put them as classic, like L.A. Confidential, Brick, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Drive's got to be in there, right?
I wouldn't. Drive is terrible.
Drive? The one with Ryan Gosling.
Yeah, the one that's Drive.
Yeah, I like that movie. You didn't like the movie?
No, it was terrible.
What? You're like the one person who doesn't like that movie.
Stupidest movie. It has a terrible soundtrack.
That's funny.
I think that the characters are just completely unlikable. I think that it's like, I it's one of those things like, I think it's the fans of Drive may have ruined Drive more than Drive ruined Drive, but Drive is not the great. I think, what's his
face? He's a real human being.
He's a real human being. Exactly. What's his name? The guy from Nemo. I can't think of his name right now.
Nemo?
Defending your life. He's in Drive. He's the bad guy.
Ooh, I know who you're talking about. Now you're forgetting him made me forget him.
Yes, exactly. It's like
it's become contagious.
Yeah, it's I'm looking. Oh, Albert Brooks. Thank you.
Yes, Albert Brooks.
Albert Brooks is fantastic in that movie. Everyone's pretty great in that movie.
Ron Perlman's excellent too.
Yeah. Ryan Gosling is just so like the way he plays that part drives me fucking up the wall. And same thing with, I'm not a huge Carey Mulligan fan.
Well, you have to, for Ryan Gosling, you have to blame the director on that one, because Ryan Gosling is a good actor. He did exactly what he was told to do. So
yeah, I mean, I personally don't like Carey Mulligan either. I don't know.
I enjoyed that film. I don't think it's like a rewatchable. Like I'm gonna watch this. I'm gonna sit down and watch Drive. But like, unlike the Maltese Falcon, which like I do think is I'm gonna sit down and watch the Maltese Falcon.
I think that's one of the things that people really like about noir movies is like they are highly rewatchable. Rewatchable.
They really are.
You know,
weird because like you'd normally think that something that's like that caps off with kind of like a twist, mystery reveal or whatever would be the least rewatchable thing, but it's not. You totally just watch it again.
I mean, like Who Framed Roger Rabbit, fantastic noir film.
Fucking love Who Framed Roger Rabbit. That movie's excellent. That movie I think is one of the I think it gets missed a lot, but I think that movie is absolutely 100% worthy in the inclusion of the like top five movies of all time debate.
I will disagree on that because I think about 45 minutes of that movie is utter nonsense. But the
I mean, it is a movie about a detective with cartoons, but it's still really
even,
fucking
even with
good.
That as the conceit, I still think there's about 45 minutes of nonsense
it's
in that movie.
It's still really, but it's really good. Although yeah. We've talked about that before, like editing films all need a lot more editing.
Well, yeah, and that movie in particular, the opening sequence before he even gets to Toontown is literally like 30 minutes, and it's like, no, do not do that to a movie. You're setting it up too long.
You know, I think perhaps for me, the second half of that movie is such a banger. It makes the like first half like not feel like a slog, because like by just about the time you're like starting to look at your watch in the first half, the movie takes off, so you forget that you were bored for 30 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, no, you're true. Because it starts off really strong, but that first act is just rough to get through. But anyway, neo-noir. What's the neo-noir Pulp Alley? That's the one. Those are the mini rules for the neo-noir stuff. And actually, speaking of like weird mini rules, War Games Illustrated just did an article about the writing of Warhammer Historical's Old West rules, and it was one of the most fascinating articles I've ever read in regards to minis.
Wasn't that the Lord of the Rings rules?
Yeah, it was just the Lord of the Rings rules, but it was like kind of like the development of how they took that, and it was very behind the scenes of Games Workshop with the writer about talking about how like he was sitting at lunch reading the Lord of the Rings rules, and he was just like, this would work with cowboys. I was enraptured by the article about this like fat I shouldn't say fat, that's not fair, but this pudgy British writer who's like, I think this would work for cowboys, and it makes me laugh so much because of, you know, we're from the land, well, we're not from the land of cowboys, but I mean, I guess if you want to include America as a whole, you know, and it's like people outside of America love cowboys more than Americans love cowboys.
That's because America got burned. Except for Texas, America got burned out on cowboys during the cowboy boom of like the late 40s to the 60s.
Yeah.
Literally everything was fucking cowboys. Like, holy fuck, dude. Like, I'm sure you're aware, but I don't know if any of the listeners are aware, but fucking Christ, dude. Media from like 1949 to like 1970, give or take, like any piece of media, fucking coin toss it, it's a fucking cowboy thing. Jesus Christ, there's so much cowboy shit. Holy fuck, can't believe it. Like I was legit like, because I was listening to some Western radio drama.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, this is pretty good. I'm like, I wonder if there's any other, me being a fucking innocent babe, I was like, wonder how many other cowboy radio dramas there are.
Well, I mean, if I had to, as a media consumer and as somewhat of a media, I would consider myself an amateur media expert. I would say that the cowboy boom went to about mid 1970s. When Gunsmoke got canceled and Heaven's Gate in 1980 killed the genre.
Yeah, you think it was that deep? That's even farther than I was thinking. But damn.
No, I think that's what that was. I mean, granted, it was like the tail end, but it officially died with Heaven's Gate in 1980. That's what I would say. Mm-hmm.
The nice thing about that though is now you can get movies like Django and Hateful Eight, and you can be like, hey, it's a Western I actually want to watch again.
Well, I think part of like what truly killed the Western was the fact of like once you know, like that Howard Zinn People's History approach kind of happened, and everyone realized how shitty we treated the natives of America.
Oh, like, yeah, for sure.
Like we like, but that's when like the major like, oh, we did what? Holy fuck, that's not good. And then people are like, well, we can't really make movies where cowboys are the heroes because they were just shitty people. So we had to start like making excuses as to why they were like not shitty people.
But well, also, the whole like the cowboys in media were not like the actual cowboys in reality, so on and so forth. You know, there's a whole fucking thing, which is why I did appreciate Red Dead Redemption 2. If you're interested in Westerns at all and you want to experience something that is, I think, pretty fucking historically accurate Western, like really play Red Dead Redemption 2. It's got it all. It's really good.
I think that the Western works better in like we've seen from Red Dead Redemption and Red Dead Redemption 2. The Western works better as a video game because the protagonists are all morally gray. And you can 100%. Have that. So you don't have to have a like in a movie, your protagonist should not be morally gray because you have to identify with the protagonist of that game of that movie. In a video game, you are the protagonist, so the protagonist takes on your morality.
Right. And also the situations are really good too, because you have like the ability to be like I'd say like even being like a bad guy, like you can like there's still like degrees, because like they did a really good like Red Dead 2 especially, they did a really good job of making your character reflect your player choices really well. And like even if you play him as like as villainous as possible, like he still doesn't like come off into like a cartoon level in terms of dialogue, I should say, because like you could absolutely be cartoonish in terms of what you do in the game. However, my absolute favorite part of that game is you can randomly like find clan rallies. And I was like, I found a fucking clan rally. And I'm like, well, fuck this. So I just immediately started throwing Molotovs on the fucking clansmen.
Oh, yeah.
And like, so they're all dead. And I fucking, and then the last one's trying to run away, and I gun him down as he's running away. And then my character's just like, I'm going to hunt down every one of you goddamn hooded rats. And I was like, that was fucking awesome.
But once again, it's like, that's modern interpretation overlaid onto the Western, because in reality
well, not necessarily, you know, John Brown fucking existed, man. You can't say that like everyone was like that. So like, yes, you can say that the mass amount of society, but that I think that's a lot of that's a lot of the themes of Red Dead 2 as well. It's like, you know, it's like you know they're an outlaw, so like they're a little different than thing. And it's also about like the, I don't know, play Red Dead Redemption 2. Anyone should play that game. It's really good.
Yeah.
I don't recommend video games often, but that is a game I would recommend to anyone.
Yeah. You know, there's a, well, what do they say about like John Brown's resting in help is he's killed all the Klansmen who are there. He double killed them or something like that. I don't remember the exact quote. God, I wish I could. Can't think of the fucking quote, but yeah, fucking John Brown killing all those idiots.
Yep. Like,
I think we should replace every Confederate statue with a statue of John Brown.
a statue of John Brown. Here we go. A statue of John Brown doing the double middle fingers, ripping a huge spliff. Absolutely. that is what we should do.
John Brown is just a terrifying individual.
Yes, I'm all in on this idea. Just like he's doing the full fucking like double middle finger pose, just fucking absolutely obliterating a gigantic spliff. That is what we should do. and then underneath it just says, fuck your quote unquote heritage. That's the line they always say about the Confederate flag, right? They say it's our heritage.
Oh yeah. Hate, not heritage. Or heritage, not hate, which is
There we go. Yeah. Fuck your heritage with quotes.
Yeah. Yeah, God, I wish I could find that fucking quote. Damn.
It sounds like a banger.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't want to.
Speaking of bangers, shenanigans, and genres, now is the time to pay off my foreshadowing. And I know you didn't see this. What? Maybe our listeners haven't seen this, but Magic the Gathering announced their big, these are our plans for the next year and a half or whatever.
A TV show with Brandon Routh? Yes.
There is a TV show apparently coming in on Netflix, but that's not the important part. Everything doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is there's going to be Fortnite Magic cards.
Woo!
Legit. They're doing a fucking Fortnite Magic card secret lair, which is the funniest fucking thing I've ever heard. I was like, that's fucking great.
Yeah.
So there you go. That was my inspiration to sing the Chug Jug with You song, was because there's going to be goddamn fucking Fortnite Magic cards. In terms of not quite 100% meme content, they did also reveal that the 40K content is just going to be Commander decks. There's not currently a planned set. So there's only going to be Commander. And then the second part of, or the second special thing is going to be Lord of the Rings, but the Lord of the Rings is going to be a full set. Like the Lord of the Rings is going to be an actual full set release with booster boxes, so on and so forth. So like Lord of the Rings going to be a thing. And then there's already going to be another D&D set, which is the long, it has a name that just rolls right off the tongue. It's Magic the Gathering Adventures in the Forgotten Realms, The Battle for Baldur's Gate is the name of the set. Yeah, actually I think it also might actually have a further subline, because it's not going to be a standard release. I think it's going to be a master set. I think it's gonna be a Modern Masters, so it might act, the set might actually be fully named Magic the Gathering Adventures of the Forgotten Realms Battle for Baldur's Gate Modern Masters. I think that actually might be the full name of the set.
Yeah, that sounds fucking terrible, but whatever.
Yeah, Fortnite, they're gonna get down. Mox, Forest, Channel, Pump 18, Chug Jug for the win. Yeah, the Magic players the Magic players' replies to the thread alone were chef's kiss. Mwah, mwah, mwah.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to talk about with the auction as well. And I think we've talked about this a little bit on the cast. You know what I actually got, which was my best score at the auction?
Best score ever or best score at this auction?
It's hard. It's one of the top scores of all time for me.
All right.
So, you know, that the Adeptus Titanicus, they released that Grandmaster Edition box set. It was like $400. It was a ridiculous amount of money.
Yes, yes, yes.
You remember that one? I think it was like $300, but it was still like a ridiculous
amount of money. Yeah, it was very, very expensive.
So that box set came up at the auction, and I was like, oh, that's pretty cool that someone's selling this. I wonder how much it's going to go for, because it's discontinued, and the figures alone are worth like $300.
Yeah, yeah, it's pricey.
So they bring it up, and they say, you know, this is the Grandmaster Edition box set complete without minis. So everything else is in there, but no minis.
So it's flawless. It's exactly what you need.
Exactly. So you know how much I got it for?
$10.
$10 exactly.
Yes.
The terrain alone was worth $60.
Boom. Nice. Yeah,
it comes like the full hardcover rule book, all of the terrain. That's unusual that all the terrain was in there. Like I wouldn't have cared if the terrain was in there or not, but that was like a hyper bonus.
Yes. And that's surprising that was in there, considering they said there was no minis. So yeah,
that was my thing, is like, I was not expecting the terrain to be in there, because I thought it was just going to be the minis and just the minis. Yeah. And I thought it was all plastic was out of there, but it came with all of like the cards, the dice, everything was in that edition for $10. I was like, man, I got lucky on this one.
that is a mega score. That is a mega score.
And I'm, you know, and as I say, I'm never going to buy more minis from Games Workshop, with very few exceptions. But it's like, it's so nice to get like the nice box set, though, because I can use them for storage for the stuff that I do have. I could print the minis all I want. And I don't have to worry about any of that stuff. I think that was, that's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like that. That definitely sounds like quite the score.
Yeah. But anyway, so we're way over at this point.
Yes. You do have to edit that little like 2 minutes.
I do have to edit out your threat. That's gonna get. That's all I need at this point in my life. Granted, I'm back working in Chicago, which is a much more if someone said, you know, fuck the police, it's going to be taken a little bit more fuck yeah at my job as opposed to where I work. But still.
So that's 2 minutes. That's 2 minutes or so you got to spare.
It's about 30 seconds in all honesty. It won't take that much. Probably 10 seconds that I could cut.
All right, fair enough.
I'm going to interject myself saying, Steve said something really dumb here. not dumb in theory, but dumb in practice.
I love it.
Yeah. So go to the Game Classy Facebook page. It's the best way you can get in contact with us. You can like, comment, and subscribe on iTunes, like, comment, subscribe on our YouTube page. If you want to track me down, you could find me mostly on Instagram. I haven't been posting lately, but that's because I've started work again, so I'm a little on the downslide for a little bit until I get like the itch again where I'm going to be painting on a regular basis. You could follow Steve at our Chicago Fuck Club on Reddit. I know he's on there regularly.
We're just trying to build the polycule, okay?
I discovered that subreddit completely on accident because I was looking at Chicago subreddits and Chicago area subreddits, and it said Chicago Fuck Club, and I was like, I'm gonna look at this. Oh, okay, that's cool for you guys.
Does it deliver does the cover deliver?
It definitely delivers if you're into Chicagoland swingers and that sort of thing, you know, more power to
you. So it delivers.
Yes,
so it delivers.
A lot of penises, though. Let me just put it that way. A lot of penises.
I mean, I ain't got no problem with that.
I got no problem. It's a thing. It exists. I'm not shaming anyone. It's a thing. If you'd like to go to the Chicago Fuck Club, feel free. Go to the Chicago Fuck Club. Yes. But anyway, so I got thrown off there. Steve is on the I'm sorry. I was looking at penises for a second.
I mean, you know, sometimes you just get distracted looking at a sweet dick.
I want to call them sweet. They were just more dicks.
I'm not going to say they're all sweet. Like I said, sweet, implying that there is a specific one that is sweet. Not like, you know, they're all sweet.
Not like they're all sweet.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. So, anywho, Steve, until next time.
Itsumo ganbatte kudasai. Please always do your best.
Yattai! Later.
Later.
Game Classy.